Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, and we are going to be talking about programming the subconscious today, and I've got some interesting clips by Dr. Bruce Lipton, and it seems to intersect with some of the stuff that we've been reading about in both the psyche and the mind of thought, so I thought I would bring these clips in and talk a little bit about this. Let me just start out by reading this from page 88 again in the book The Psyche. It says, the actual decisions and deeds of every human being are only partially based on fully conscious considerations. The greatest part stems from the area which is withdrawn from the immediate influence of the will, the subconscious, the cerebellum, or the unconscious, whatever one wants to call it. There in the most concealed and undecipherable depths of the brain, all actions and emissions are prepared, which to a large extent determine the course of the life and the destiny of the life and the individual of the human being. So Dr. Lipton describes it this way. He says that we have these programs running in our subconscious mind, and we go and pick a program, and that's what we're running on most of the time during the day. Our conscious mind only works about 5% of the time. When we were from 1 to 7 years old, we were in constant downloading or learning these programs, these subconscious programs. So let me take a look and pull up some of these clips, and then we'll go ahead and I'll play a clip if I can find them, which I'm sure I can. Might just take a second here. Okay, here we go. I think this will be the first one.
Ask you then, bringing consciousness into your life, how you're shifting from living in 5% automatic conscious into closer to 100%. Are you a meditator? Is visualization enough to change this consciousness?
Visualization is an approach, but there are many more effective approaches as well. And this is why I listed them in the resources on belief change modification, energy psychology, group, different modalities. The whole idea is this. We have to recognize that the subconscious mind and the conscious mind do not learn in the same way. And this has been the biggest problem in the entire world, because people say, I've become so aware of something, but my life is still the same. Oh, I read the self-help book, but my life is still the same. And the whole idea is this. Well, here's the point. The conscious mind is creative mind. The subconscious mind is habitual mind. It has habits in it. Significance is this. When you have habits, you don't want them to change very quickly. A habit is something you learn that you want to, like, you learn how to do it. I don't want to have to learn how to do it again. I learned how to walk. I don't want to learn how to walk again. I know how to drive a car. I don't want to have to do that again. Habits are good when they're good habits. But the issue about that is the conscious mind is not a habit mind. It's a creative mind. As a result of being a creative mind, it has this great ability to synthesize and learn very fast. I can read the self-help book. I go, wow, if I give you a test, after you read the book, you say, look, I got 100 on the test. I go, great. Your conscious mind has understood all the data because it read it and it learned it. Now I say, did the subconscious mind learn from that? And the answer is no. For a simple reason, it doesn't learn that way. And there's a difference. We can educate the conscious mind very quickly and easily through all the efforts of going to programs, reading books, watching videos. You know, you can go, aha, and the conscious mind learns something. Subconscious mind doesn't do it that way. subconscious mind learns primarily in normal life two ways. Number one, first 7 years, hypnosis. So that was bypassing consciousness and then putting data straight into the subconscious mind. Okay? Then number two was after year seven, we're not doing hypnosis anymore. Now we're doing habituation, repetition. How did you learn ABCs? Well, you had to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, and then you finally got from A to Z. But once you did it, you didn't have to do it again. Okay? So the conscious mind can go, aha, learn something, and it has no impact on the subconscious program. Mm. And people think, well, I can talk to myself. And I go, that's another problem. Because you are an entity in the conscious mind. That's where you, your source, your spiritual connection, conscious mind. But I say, well, who's in the subconscious mind? I go, nobody's in the subconscious mind. It's a machine. It just records. It's like an old-fashioned tape recorder. You have a tape playing, and you say, I don't like the program. So I say, okay, go talk to the tape player. And you go up and you talk to the tape player. You say, stop playing that. Play something different. You know, I don't like this. Play something different. I say, how much talking to the tape player will it take for the tape player to change? And the answer is, it will never change because that's not how it learns. So basically, talking to yourself is frustrating because your conscious mind is the smart, a wise one, because that's the one that learns from everything very quickly just by hearing it. You learned it. The subconscious mind doesn't learn that way. And there's nobody in there. So the frustration comes with the conscious mind saying, okay, subconscious, don't play this behavior anymore. And then the behavior repeats, and then you go, hey, I keep saying don't play this behavior, and it's still playing. I'm going, because who are you saying it to? There's nobody there. You want the subconscious to learn, you have to information in the way that the subconscious mind uses information. Hypnosis, repetition. And now three is this new energy psychology, belief change modifications, which are like super learning techniques. If you don't use these three, you will not change the program in the subconscious. And this becomes, you know, the aggravating part of people. Their conscious minds are so smart. They have all the answers. They know exactly what to do, and their life doesn't work that way. And the answer is because you didn't translate from the conscious mind into the subconscious mind just because you put it into the conscious mind. People have to know that. If you want to change the subconscious, the fundamental of way, hypnosis, that means you could put earphones on at night, because as you go to bed, as you're coming from consciousness to sleep, you pass through theta. Mm-hmm. And if the earphones are on, theta is a direct download in the subconscious. So you can do, subliminal tapes, really good. If you want to do something else, then repetition, something that you keep repeating and repeating, because that's how you create a new habit. So you have to take where you would normally play an old behavior, you have to consciously play a new behavior and keep repeating that new behavior, and that will do it. And psychology is like pushing the record button. It's like finding how to create a super learning moment so that in that super learning moment, you can download a belief in 5 minutes. And that is necessary right now for this reason is, civilization is pushing itself against the wall here. Mm-hmm. We're creating planetary upheaval, destroying ourselves. We don't have a lot of future time to spend months on reprogramming, which would be like, you know, trying to make new habits and stuff like that. Necessity is the mother of invention. We have a necessity to change fast, and now there's an invention of, you know, energy psychology, belief change modification, that offers this opportunity because we need to get our feet on the ground as soon as fast as we can.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have found EFT, emotional freedom technique, the matrix re-imprinting technique, to work as well. I'm excited to look more into the Psych-K because you're right. We also have a responsibility as parents.
Oh, absolutely.
It is not just this, I want to feel better about myself. We have a responsibility to do this so that we can be living more consciously and so that we can teach our children.
Exactly.
That is also their responsibility, that this is a part of their life, is to learn how to be a conscious human being. So.
This definitely the direction, because we lost it. And it's quite unfortunate because, as I said in the very beginning, we are in the matrix. We have been programmed. And you say, well, how'd that happen? And I go, well, interesting point, and this is, you know, you got to own this fact, is that the Jesuits would boast for 500 years. They would boast, give me a child until it's seven and I will show you the man. What they were actually saying is, if you give me the first 7 years of programming, I will create the outcome of what will happen. They somehow knew that once the program was in, no matter what the individual wanted, it was the subconscious that was going to run the show anyway. So if I could program your subconscious, I could then control your fate. This has been repeated for 500 years. Something as serious as important as this didn't get lost by the leadership of this world. So we have all been programmed, and we're continuously being programmed. And as you mentioned, it's time for us to wake up. We have responsibilities. Once we know this, it's really responsible for us to wake up, clear our own programs, and at the same time, do not perpetuate the programming onto our children, because this is what is being, the lineage is the program. People think it's genetics that is the lineage, and it's like, no, the programming is a lineage. And if you change the programming, you change the life instantly at that point. And that's the most important thing that we need to understand as parents, is that everything you say, everything you do for the first 7 years of that child's life is being recorded and becoming their behavior.
Thank you so much for your time. Dr. Bruce Lipton, you have just shed some light on some new pathways for me to research. I am honored. I am grateful. Thank you so much.
I so appreciate this. Thank you for asking the questions, and I hope the answers were in some way useful, darling.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, that was a rather long clip there where Dr. Bruce Lipton again explains that the conscious mind learns quickly and easily, and the subconscious mind is kind of like a tape recorder. It works during the first 7 years of our life, and it's recording all of these quote-unquote programs of behaviors that it's learning. And then the only chance we have now, we've got two opportunities for programming the subconscious mind as an adult, and one is through repetition, over and over and over again. That's the way a musician learns, by the way. He programs his subconscious with a piece of music so he can play it intuitively. It's kind of called implicit knowledge, or he doesn't really have to put any real effort into playing it. It's just part of the subconscious mind. Now, the other thing you can do is you can listen to these tapes in the evening that has information that you want to pass on to your subconscious mind. See, the subconscious mind controls all your habits. It's the things you always fall back into doing. In other words, about 95% of the time, you're functioning on subconscious mind. About 5 to 10% of the time, you're actually kicking in your conscious mind. But he has some faster rate of learning, which I haven't figured out yet. I haven't learned about yet. He probably goes over it in some other YouTubes or something. So you might think of the subconscious mind like a tape recorder. So that was something very, very interesting that I thought was very important to kind of pull up and take note of. And one of the reasons that I say that is because one of the things I've learned from the Might of Thoughts book is that there are these, when you study this material, it goes into the conscious mind, and you may learn it and understand it, or learn part of it and understand part of it, but to really be able to utilize it, it has to go down into the subconscious mind, and that, the only way we can get it down in there is repetition. And one of the, so I have these 12 things that I've memorized from the Might of Thoughts book that helps a lot. And you might, I have these under the important things to tell yourself. The concepts come throughout the whole book, but particularly between page 200 and 230. And these concepts are related to harmony. Harmony and enthusiasm, they seem to go hand in hand. So anyway, these will help you control your anxiety when you find yourself getting anxiety. Just tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm cheerful, I'm relaxed, I'm enthusiastic, I'm thankful, I'm in harmony, I persist, I persevere, I endure, I am calm, I am satisfied. So if you can repeat these same things over and over again, this is going to help bring your mind out of that confused emotional state. The other things from the book here that I think are real powerful is where he says, he tells us, you are the master of your own destiny. I say it like this, I'm the master of my own destiny. I'm the forger of my own fortune. I create my own good luck. I do not allow my thoughts to drift. I'm like a captain steering a ship. I steer my thoughts. My consciousness is like a garden filled with healthy, flowing, luxurious plants, and I have to nurture my thoughts. To nurture thoughts means that you clarify your thoughts. To clarify your thoughts, one of the ways to do that is repetition. Repetition, when you repeat things, certain ideas and notions become clearer in those thoughts. So that's why I wondered why I felt this urge all the time to repeat this information. And it's so important because your conscious mind has little to do with with your behavior. Most of the time, 90% of the time, you're on your unconscious or your subconscious mind. For example, when you're driving, you are kind of switching into conscious mind into subconscious. You know, conscious mind, subconscious. You're kind of going back and forth. That's probably why some people have accidents very, very easily. But anything that you do habitually all the time has a lot to do with your subconscious mind. So we want certain information to get down to our subconscious to change our behaviors. That's why when a person becomes an addict, he can't break out of his subconscious mind. His subconscious mind, for example, may be telling him to drink alcohol, whatever, I'm just using that example, or to eat too much food. You know, maybe you're addicted to food. Well, you have this program that's playing in your subconscious mind over and over and over again. And that could be eating too much. It could be drinking too much alcohol or whatever your area of addiction might be. So it's just this program that's playing over and over in your mind. So let's step back a little bit and we'll repeat a little bit so this goes down into our subconscious. Again, to see the big picture in case someone is out there and I didn't even start the chat room. I've got a lot of information on my mind right now. So let me open this up. I should have done that earlier. Let me throw a few little promotions out there. So in case someone wanted to come to the live show, most of the people are listening to the archives. But just to let you know, I think all of this information is critical that it gets down into our subconscious, because I think that's where we can really use it. That's where it starts to affect your belief system and your behavior system. So again, for everyone, especially a maybe newer listener, Edward Albert Meyer is an 81-year-old man. He lives in Switzerland. He is a very prolific author. He's written 50 books. These books are written originally in German, and the people that are associated with the Meyer organization say there is an evolution code in the German. The way the words are put together, the ordering and everything is structured in this specific way that's designed to release information out of what's called the universal storage banks. A planet that has life on it has storage banks. Now, maybe even the planets that don't have life have these spiker banks, but I assume it's only the planets with life have these storage banks. And the solar system has storage banks. The galaxy has storage banks, and the universe has storage banks. And all this information that occurs, your thoughts, your attitudes, they go into these storage banks. And these storage banks, they signal, they send out information. It's like a broadcast. And that's why, for example, if a monkey learns how to wash his potato before eating it, and that keeps him from getting sick as much, somehow that information seems to go out into these storage banks. And so another monkey on the other side of the earth can pick up the same information. I think that's an example. I don't know if the Meyer information used that example, but I think that would probably be a legitimate example. Now, Billy, when he was growing up in an area called Niederflux in the Bulak, Switzerland, and Bulak is a municipality in Switzerland, and it belongs to what's called the Glatt Valley, a very beautiful area. Anyway, it was about 1941, and Billy went outside and sat down on a bench, and it was May. It was a beautiful starry night, and he looked up at this beautiful starry night, and he started to get this information broadcasted to him from the storage banks. And he literally heard a voice in his head which said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And suddenly, it was on Billy's lips. He said, "Since ancient times, you have lived among the stars." And this information is coming to this young boy. He's about 3 or 4 years old. It's 3 a.m. He's looking up at this beautiful starry night. And he knows what his mission on the earth is. And he heard these impulses, or suddenly these impulses came from somewhere. And these impulses resulted in memories. So, and Billy, his spirit form is at an age where it can remember previous lives. Typically, people don't. Sometimes there'll be an example when someone remembers, but typically at our level of evolution on this planet, we don't. We don't remember information from past lives because that would be too disturbing and too... it would be very traumatic. I mean, if you can think about things even in this life that were traumatic that you had to kind of forget, you had to push out of your mind to a degree because obsessing over them was just unhealthy and painful. Now imagine all your previous lives. Now, you might be a person that says, "Well, wait a minute, there's no such thing as reincarnation. What are you talking about?" Well, the Meyer information describes reincarnation a little differently than most people do, because he says your spirit form is what reincarnates. Well, what is a spirit form? A spirit form is a fine matter thing. It's not physical. Your spirit form is located in the center of your middle brain, in an area called the superior colliculus. And it's called a fragment of the universal consciousness. And it's this neutral thing. Spirit forms are always neutral. You hear all the stories about evil spirits and all that sort of stuff. According to the Meyer organization, the Meyer people, that's not true, because a spirit form is absolutely neutral, just like the universal consciousness is neutral. They use the word neutral, positive, equalized, balance. So it's not evil. There's no evil spirits out there. Now, people can get out of control of the good human nature, and they can follow a path that is evil. For example, people often use the example of Hitler. Well, Hitler, you can call as, people would say, as an evil person. Well, his spirit form is not evil. It was neutral. In fact, Hitler, according to the Meyer information, was impulsed by the Pleiaren. He was impulsed to be a very, very beneficial leader for the people of the earth. He eventually was turned off of the path of evolution, because that's all we're doing. All spirit forms, all people are just evolving. That's why we live physical lives. We live physical lives to learn more and to learn from our mistakes. Now, so Hitler didn't have an evil spirit inside him. And according to Meyer information, there are really no demons. Demons, as taught by our religions, and these, there are no angels as taught by our religions either. Now, this kind of stuff causes cognitive dissonance in people. Because even today, we're taught about evil spirits and all this. But we only have, according to Meyer information, one spirit inside of ourselves. That's a law of nature. You have one spirit per physical brain. Now, what happens is, people can become psychotic, people can become mentally ill, people can behave in ways that are not helpful, not healthy, and this is what happens. But we are absolutely responsible for everything that we do, everything that we say, all of our behaviors, and this responsibility is something that we are here on the earth becoming more and more aware of. So anyway, Billy's this young boy. I was talking about Billy, and we were talking about signals coming out of these storage banks. And Billy heard again a voice, almost like a voice, and it was information coming from these storage banks. And he said, since ancient times, you have lived among the stars. And Billy says suddenly he knew who he was and what his mission on the earth was. And he says, suddenly, impulses came from somewhere, which I later recognized as impulses from the storage banks, and many good memories penetrated me and showed me the way that I had to go in my life. And thus, I also suddenly knew what space and time signify concerning the evolution of human beings and all things. And Billy wrote this down in article, it's up on the web on the Future of Mankind site, called How It All Began. So let me just read a paragraph out of this to you. It's one of the most profound writings that Billy has ever written. And he said, already at the age of 4, this great recognition instantly changed my life. Because after I was familiarized with this insight and understanding by means of the impulses from the storage banks, and also learned who I really was, what I had to learn and do in my life, and what my life task was, I looked at human beings, animals, and nature, as well as all existing things, in a completely new way. And suddenly I felt a great astonishment within me, which I now discovered. I suddenly saw myself in everything, in every fellow human being, in every flower or other plant, in every tree and every shrub, in every animal, in snow and in water, in the earth and the lightning and the thunder and the clouds and the wind and in the sunshine, because everything was and is connected in true creational love and forms a unity which can never be separated. Even life and death are woven into it and are inseparably intertwined with each other. And exactly as a result of this connection, which was instantly clear to me, everything is mixed and connected in infinitely various ways through which innumerable manifestations of life and existences were created, exist, and will continue to be created. So let me step back and let's talk about even life and death are woven into it and are inseparably intertwined with each other. So when you die, your spirit form leaves your body, it leaves the superior colliculus in your middle brain, and it takes with it all of the knowledge that you learned both in your conscious mind, your subconscious mind, which is kind of mostly a program running all the time, and the information. By the way, before the spirit form comes in, it programs the subconscious with all the information, all of your evolutive values from your previous life, like your sense of fairness and duty and wisdom and love, and all that goes, it's programmed into your subconscious. And you, if you're a typical Earth human, have lived something like 3.5 or 4.5 million lifetimes. Roughly, we are at stage 2 out of 7 stages in human evolution, according to the Meyer information. It'd be interesting as time goes on to see that play out, because in any way, your spirit form, it leaves your physical body and it takes with it everything you've learned from this lifetime, and it goes into this other dimension, for lack of a better term, the fine matter world. And you, if you lived 100 years, you'll spend about 152 years in this energy band around the planet, this fine matter world. And your spirit form will take all the information from your conscious mind and place it in what's called a storage bank, and it will process all of this information, and then it processes down into these evolutive values, and so your logic, your love, your cheerfulness, your sense of duty, your confidence, your optimism, all these things are programmed and then taken, and your spirit form absorbs them. So your spirit form gets smarter and it gets a little stronger. And then this information is programmed into the new subconscious, because the spirit form then creates a new subconscious, a new unconscious, and a new conscious mind. Your new conscious mind gets a new personality. And so now you've got this new multi-layer conscious mind. It's like sitting in this storage bank in this other dimension. And your spirit form now, let's say everything went according to the normal norms, and it spent, you had a 100-year lifetime, and you spent 150 years processing all the information from your previous life. Now the spirit form is ready to go back into the body of a child. And I imagine this is kind of the way it works. I don't know that it's been spelled out exactly like this, but I think the creation, as the Meyer material refer to it, the universal consciousness takes your spirit form and the new consciousness and puts it into a child 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. And when that spirit form comes into the body of a child, it lodges itself in the middle of the brain in an area called the superior colliculus.
and it sends
out a lattice structure of energy throughout the whole body. It causes the heart to beat. It causes the consciousness of the child to start to think. And that little tiny little baby, it in its subconscious is at the same level of evolution that it made during that 100-year lifetime that it just lived. In other words, it doesn't, your spirit form doesn't ever really go backwards in terms of its evolution. My understanding is that, and I'll say this is my understanding until someone can point me out where I'm wrong, but your spirit form continues to march forward. If you have a life, let's say, and I think this is possible, where you can have a life where you almost didn't evolve whatsoever. I think in any lifetime you evolved, even accidentally, a little bit over the previous life in some area. But the spirit form will typically never ever go backwards. Even though you had a life where you just, say, screwed up one thing after another and you never really got with the program, well, you won't really go backwards, I don't think. I think the spirit form holds on to that information for all eternity. So if you've had a 100 very good lifetimes up until this point where something happened and you just, things fell apart in this lifetime, you're not really going to go backwards. So in the spirit realm, maybe the spirit form doesn't have as much really work to do. I don't know. Maybe it's just as much work. I don't know. But we typically tend to spend a lifetime and a half in the spirit realm. So if you were 100 years old, you spend about 150, 152 years processing the information from your previous life. Now, the interesting thing about that is that there are things on the planet that happen in the planet that can affect the time that you have, one of which is overpopulation. Now, a lot of people will say, well, we're not overpopulated. That's just pure bonkers, because you can fit all 7 billion people in the planet into 200 or 300 or whatever square miles in Texas, and then we could all just live there just happy. Well, if you do just a little bit of little thinking beyond that, well, you've got 7 billion people. There's probably 9 billion people on the planet. Let's say there's 7 billion people, just as what I think most people would kind of agree with, that there are 7 billion people on the planet. Well, if those people are now going to be Texans, let's just say they're going to be Texans and they're going to want to eat some steak. Well, let's say you give everyone, they can have one cow in their whole lifetime for food. Well, it takes about 2 acres for a cow to really graze per cow. It's about 1.6 if you look it up on the internet. Let's just say 2 to rough it out. Well, that would be 14 billion additional acres just for the beef that these 7 billion people that you've crammed into Texas are going to eat. Well, what about the chicken and the turkey and the ham, whatever else they're going to eat? You're talking billions and billions of additional acres. You know, you'd probably be able to feed them more than one chicken. You might be able to feed them 10 chickens or 20 chickens in 2 acres, who knows. But the food is phenomenal in terms of space. I mean, these people eat corn and rice. And then depending on the lifestyle that you give these 7 billion people that you've crammed into Texas, what if they're going to have cars and computers and watches and cell phones and musical instruments and lights and garages and garage doors, and they're going to have all these things? Well, you're going to need factories, many, many, many factories. So anyway, The whole idea of cramming all these people, yeah, you can cram them in there, but it doesn't really change all of the additional space that these people need for food, for their various technologies. Let me explain another thing. I'm just kind of going off on a little tangent here on population a little bit. If you look at your house, for example, if you have a, let's just say, a 1,000-square-foot house, I'm not sure what kind of math you want to do for that. So if you take a 1,000-square-foot house and you divide it by 10, what is that? That would be 100, right? You would have 100 tens in there. 100 times 10 is equal to 1,000. I think that's pretty straightforward. So let's say that you give 10 people 100 square feet. So each person gets 100 square feet to live in. Well, you would think, hey, wow, that's pretty interesting. You know, maybe I could fit 10 people into that house. Or what if you give them a lot less than 100 square feet? What if you give them 20 square feet? How many people could you really fit into your house? And I don't have a calculator handy with me right now, but I started to do some calculations, and I could fit 20 or 30. I could probably fit 30 people into my house right now. Now, they wouldn't be comfortable, but they would fit. You could cram them in there. Well, what would happen to my house with 30 people living in it? Well, I think the toilets would be a mess almost all the time. The bathrooms would be a disaster. People, 20 or 30 people trying to take showers, you wouldn't. Your hot water is not going to last very long. You're going to have people probably every 2 hours going to the store to get more groceries. You're going to have to rotate in terms of cooking. Can you imagine how quickly you'd break down your dishwasher, or how quickly you would break down your washer and dryer, or like I said, the bathroom would be a disaster. Can you imagine the piles of garbage that would accumulate outside your house? If you had 30, you could probably literally fit 30 people into a decent-sized house. Well, it's insanity. I mean, it's totally insane. But if you start to think the way people think about population, you start to think that's okay to have that many people crammed into a 1,000-square-foot house. You think it's okay to have 20 or 30 people. And that's what's happening in these third world countries right now. Yeah, you can fit them in there, but the disaster that ensues is gargantuan. For example, and I'll throw there are about 4 million people born on the street and die on the street in India every year. This is one of those nations where they've got plenty of square miles. You can fit the people in there. I agree with you on that. But the disaster that ensues, well, 4 million people, they're born. Can you imagine being a baby born on the street? And that's what's happening in the U.S. right now. We have tent cities that are forming because we have 100,000 people coming in every month in the United States. You know that 18 million people starve to death every year in the world? There are 9,000 newborns per hour. A little country like Bangladesh has 146 million people in it. So they took the advice of the people that say there are no population problems. They did that in Bangladesh. 146 million people in a little country the size of Iowa. You know, one of the hardest things to do in that country is to get a little bit of decent water to drink. It's a cesspool. And then 10 million people die from the situation in these horrible countries all over the place. The world population grows by 77 million people annually. So I think it's Beijing that has 13 million people in it. 50 lanes of traffic centering that, going around that city. I remember when Frosty Wooldridge came on my show and told me about that. I didn't believe him. I literally told Frosty, you must be exaggerating. There couldn't be 50 lanes of traffic in Beijing. And he sent me the links, and I saw the films. So you think you got a problem, a traffic problem in the United States? I know that where I work, I fight traffic every single day. And at a certain time, it's a traffic jam every single day. Well, the way people think in their backward, and I hate to say backward, but the way they look at the world, they think that's normal. Well, that is not normal. And the answer, as you can see from Beijing, is not to create more lanes, which is what people think. You know, this is the way we have to learn to think about things in a different way. In some of these other countries, like in China, you have traffic jams that can be 90 miles long, 182 miles long in Brazil, traffic jams. Can you imagine that? Just another statistic, in Africa, only six, I think only two out of eight children live. Six of them starve to death. Can you imagine the depression of seeing your child starve to death? Six of them starve to death. Can you imagine the psychological trauma? Imagine if you had six dogs starve to death. But what about your own children? That would be ghastly. There are large dead zones appearing in the oceans and the rivers all over the world. States like, for example, Colorado lost 1.65 million acres of farmland to development. That's the other thing that's happening. All the farmland is starting to leave now, and it's getting filled up by development. Well, I went on a huge rant there in terms of population, which is really wasn't really my intention. What I'm studying right now on the Mind of Thoughts is really a challenge to wrap your mind around. We have, and this is on page 288 in the Mind of Thoughts, we have an inner nature and an innermost creational nature. An innermost creational nature is related to our spirit form. It's always neutral, positive. It sends impulses to your material consciousness, to your inner nature. And the inner nature is related to your material consciousness and your personality in this lifetime. So let me read what it says here, and then we can try to make a little more information. It says here, and it is also certain that whoever has built up his or her inner nature with the impulses of the innermost creational nature has caused it to blossom, can love himself in all honesty and deference, without thereby falling into negative and bad states. But connected with that is knowing oneself. Consequently, the effective facts of the newly formed and creationally directed inner nature must therefore be recognized and accepted before a practical and respectful love can come about. So when you're growing spiritually, you'll have love for your inner nature. There's no separation between the inner nature and the inner creational nature. However, if the human being remains separated from himself, and that's what happens, say we slack off. I have felt this. I'm familiar with this. You slack off in terms of your evolution. What happens here? It says, however, if the human being remains separated from himself by disregarding his inner nature and not forming it such that it conforms with the creational natural laws and recommendations, then he or she separates him or herself, so to speak, from his or her own life. And as a result of not developing him or herself higher, he or she distances himself from real life. That is to say, his real self. So you get separated from your real self. And this is a state, it's an unnatural state. Let me read what it says here. The unnatural state which works against the creation natural impulses and laws. So your innermost creational nature is impulsing your inner nature. Remember we were talking about the impulses Billy was getting from the storage bank. So your spirit form also impulses you. Your spiritual consciousness impulses you. Can satisfy no human being in the long term. Consequently, he or slash she inevitably becomes unsatisfied with him or herself. And if you feel that, I've felt it before, I start to feel unsatisfied with myself. And you get out of alignment. You feel out of alignment. And this will bring inequity and harm on you. So you get to the point where you don't like yourself anymore. It's an unavoidable consequence. This not liking oneself anymore does not concern the material body. Rather, it concerns the self-created, unnatural inner nature. That is to say, the inner self. So as you resist these creational natural impulses, that you will get to the point where you're frustrated with yourself. You won't like yourself anymore. You start to not like yourself. Now, this is a problem that in this, I think, can lead to depression. People also hide from themselves. And this goes back to we are ill in our consciousness on the earth. The people of the earth are ill. That doesn't mean just use you're ill, I'm ill, we're all ill. And this is a fantastic statement. Elizabeth Moosberger said this in The Mind of Thoughts. She was one of the people in the Meyer organization. She was the wife of Guido Moosberger, which wrote a great book on Billy's information called They and Still They Fly. And she said, so the book which lies before you is dedicated to a humankind that is ill in its consciousness so that it finds the creational, natural way again. So part of this healing is learning to think independently. We have to start to learn to think independently. We may have to learn to program our subconscious with different behavior patterns. And that comes, first of all, through repetition. We have to repeat certain concepts into our conscious mind, and then they sink down into the subconscious like water when you're watering a garden. So you tell yourself, I'm confident. I'm optimistic. Even though at the moment you may not be confident or optimistic, tell yourself. Because you have a power in your thinking that can literally manifest pretty much anything. So tell yourself, you're confident, you're optimistic, you're relaxed, you're cheerful, you're enthusiastic, you're thankful, you persevere, I persist, I endure, I am calm, I am relaxed. So this information eventually goes down into the subconscious where the real power is. It takes time. It's you use repetition to teach your subconscious. Now the other thing that we do that is one of the biggest problems, really the source of all human problems, it says on page 256 of the Way to Live, is the grasping and the holding. The grasping and the holding on are the sources of all human problems. The grasping and holding on cannot be coordinated with the becoming and the passing. Consequently, the human being does not want to come to terms with that. As soon as he or she is able to think, she grasps possession of the life and holds onto it with all means, whereby he or she simply pushes aside and ignores the fact of mortality of the life, because he or she associates the mortality and thereby the death with the pain. Therefore, for the human being, mortality means the same as pain. Therefore, the human being, mortality means the same as pain, for which he or she desperately clings to his life, as well as to all things, indeed, truthfully, all things, all constantly change. Everything changes, and everything is mortal. Naturally, the human being ought to live his or her life and esteem it. But he or she ought to no more set it above all that passes, that he or she should above all things which are likewise mortal. So let me read that again. Naturally, the human being ought to live his or her life and esteem it. But he or she ought to no more set it above all that passes than he or she should above all things which are likewise mortal. The life is the highest good purpose of the human being, but let that not mislead him or her into positioning it above the death, nor into simply disregarding the death. So the life and the death are like two different sides of the same coin. Heads, you're alive right now. Tails, you're dead for, and you have a mission in the death time. You're preparing for the new life. Truthfully, the human being must namely carefully study the death, and thereby also the passing of all things, because only thereby does there arise the right understanding of the relationship between life and death. And for the fact that the death in the realm of the mortality is only a passage to a new beginning, a new life. However, the human being acts contrary to that with his grasping and holding fast to the life and to all things, because he or she is anxious about the death and the mortality. So maybe we'll leave it right there and we'll pick back up in the next program. Got a lot going on. I've been asked to come back to Revolution Radio, and I guess I'm heading back there too. I'm not sure how it's going to affect our blog talk show at this point. But you've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great, I guess it's Memorial Day weekend, isn't it? So have a great one. We'll see you. Bye-bye.